You're listening to me, Raphael Epstein. We're coming to you from Fed Square. Josh Nelson has ventured down. He's braved the rain. He's had the sun in his eyes 1 minute and the lashing rain in his face the next. Ah, Melbourne in spring. Josh, welcome.
Nice to be here.
Now, let's lash a legendary Hollywood director. We've got a few different films to discuss. We'll get on to another, how shall we say, problematic director, Tim Burton, in a moment. But let's talk Oliver Stone and his film Savages. Let's have a little listen to remind us of what his film about the drug war in California is all about.
Just because I'm telling you this story doesn't mean I'm alive at the end of it. It's that kind of a story where things just got so out of control.
Sparky's a great dog. When you lose someone you love, they never really leave you. He'll always be in your heart.
I don't want him in my heart. I want him here with me.
Sparky, you're alive!
Go on, Sparky. That's right.
That is ending there. Frank and Weenie, that's the new Tim Burton feature. Let's talk Oliver Stone first. Savages. I had a word to Benicio Del Toro. I didn't really have the guts to tell him I thought the film sucked.
I wish you had, because then yeah. I would have skipped it.
Okay.
And I wished I had.
So tell us, it's not enough to say a film's no good. Tell us why Oliver Stone's latest doesn't work.
I think when you were doing the interview, I mentioned that Oliver Stone wasn't the most subtle of directors. He has a knack for the stylistic extremes. This film is preposterous in terms of it's the most incoherent Oliver Stone film I think he's ever made. Those quirks that he kind of got away with in Natural Born Killers have just been turned all the way up to 11 here.
Yeah.
The cutting from classical music to rap, to gangster rap, then to electronica, cutting from black and white to colour. I mean, I could forgive those sort of idiosyncrasies if it had any kind of point or relevance to the plot. But for two surfer dudes who are kind of, you know, who are producing marijuana and then the Mexican cartel move in, but they don't want to move it in the turf, they just want them to grow the marijuana for them.
It doesn't make
a lot, whole lot of sense.
It's a little, actually, bizarre comparison. It struck me as like the new Star Wars film. It was kind of like about a trade war. It's like so irrelevant to the idea of an adventure story. And it was the same with Oliver Stone. It's not even a Godfather scenario where they're trying to pull someone back into the trade or out of the trade. It's kind of the Trade Federation version of a drug war film, and it as a plot device, it lacks a lot.
It does lack a lot. I mean, I'm not sure what he was actually aiming for with this, because it doesn't really work as the sort of the typical sort of get shorty heist film or drug bust film. There's all these references to Shakespeare in the first 5 minutes, and then that just seems to be forgotten about. I mean, the fact that one of the female characters in this is called O, named after Ophelia, and you heard a glimpse of that awful voiceover that runs throughout this film. And the idea of savages, I thought they could have done something interesting with the violence, and you talked about the violence with Benicio. But they don't
my mate Benicio.
Yeah, you're
never going to talk to me again.
You and the B-man.
Yeah.
But they don't do anything interesting with it. And I thought they could have, because there's so many references to the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, this notion of the Mexicans as savages and the Americans as, you know,
yes,
we do things the right way.
Yes.
Which could have, you know, could have satisfied some kind of interesting subtext for the film. But it's just forgotten about as soon as it's mentioned. So really, really frustrating film.
Okay, look, that's Oliver Stone's Savages. You won't really get a fantastic recommendation from us. You can check out Josh's blog, filmology.com. That's spelt with a PH, filmology.com. We'll continue with Tim Burton in a moment. I just want to read you a few of the texts. Raph, you just made me cry. That's from Myrene in her car. Wuthering Heights, just magical. I love that. Great song. Sadly, I hated the book. That's from Carolyn Coburg. I saw Kate Bush at the Hammersmith Odeon in 1980. This 13-year-old was changed forever. Even now, the hairs on my neck stand up when I hear this song. That's from Paul. And so, what a great way to end a great day with squawking junk like that. That was from Brad, who didn't enjoy the song at all. But there you go. You're in the minority, Brad, but thanks for sending a text. We've still got a hearty bunch of 774 listeners. Do we have any more cake left? No, some of the late attendees. Sorry, we don't have any more cake for you. Josh Nelson is this guy right here. I'm just explaining for people. This is Josh. He actually isn't the small thing on the radio. He's a full-size person. Josh, tell me about Tim Burton's latest, often a frustrating experience, seeing a Tim Burton film.
Yes.
Frank and Weenie, Tell me a bit about it. Is it good?
It's actually amazing. It's really good. After Dark Shadows a few months ago, I think I actually said I'm never going to watch a Tim Burton film again. I think that was the love affair was over. And I was worried about Frankenweenie because it's a remake of a short live-action film that he made in 1984 that starred Barrett Oliver, who is Bastion in Neverending Story.
Oh, right, okay.
And Shelley Duvall. And it's basically about a young boy whose dog dies and he reanimates him. Sort of
a la Frankenstein.
And then it's, you know, plays off the Frankenstein myth with the neighbors don't understand Sparky the dog, but they learn to love Sparky the dog once they see that, you know, he may look different, but he's still just the same old Sparky. This is wonderful. And I was worried with Tim Burton going back and remaking his old work, a la George Lucas and Spielberg, who've all kind of come a cropper doing this. and it works. What they've done is, instead of doing it as a live action, Tim Burton's done it in the style of an earlier animation.
By the way, I just want to tell people before you get into early animation, that sound in the background, that is Melbourne's heavens unleashing on the 774 outside broadcast. But Lindy is going to continue the trend. She will be broadcasting. The PM team, wussies, they're broadcasting from inside a studio. Lindy will be here. Josh, continue.
Well, it's very Burton-esque. We just need some lighting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lightning. And also, it's done in the style of one of his earliest animations, Vincent, which was stop-motion, wonderful, which had Vincent's Price voiceover. And he's gone back to that earlier style, and he's expanded the story a little bit, but the basics of the story are still the same. And this is a real love affair. You know, when Burton is at his best is when I think he's reminiscing about those 1930s, 40s, 50s horror sci-fi monster films. It's like Ed Wood, which is probably his last great film, I think.
Yes.
And this is such a wonderfully touching film. It's well made because I think the narrative was there to begin with. It's a perfect story. He hasn't messed around with it too much. He's brought back the regulars in like Winona Ryder and Catherine O'Hara.
So they're the voices.
So they're some of the voices. Martin Landau plays this wonderful sort of science teacher. And there's a lovely subtext with the science teacher about the right and wrong way to treat science, which is sort of with a knowing wink, I think, to contemporary sort of science in the way in which...
Oh, okay, climate change science.
Absolutely. So there's just a whole lot of love in this film. I think it's wonderful. I'm not sure who the demographic's going to be. I think this is going to be the tough sell because I don't think it's a young children's animation. And I don't know how many adults are going to want to kind of go back to Burton if they've been put off by his last few efforts. But I think probably from, I don't know what kids are like these days, 10, 12-year-old sort of upwards, I definitely recommend it. And the 3D is really good as well.
So just a bit on the technology. It's all computer or it's models made into stop motion? How's it made?
So it's made so that the foreground figures are stop motion, like the kind of the Aardman animations, but in a sort of a distinctive Burton style. And I think a lot of the background's been done in CGI. It's taken a couple of years. I mean, they announced this project, I think, back in 2008. So it's been a long time, which is good, I think.
And it's spectacular visually, or how would you describe it?
Well, it's kind of got a quaint nostalgia to it. It's very much like those older horror movies, those older sort of sci-fi films. That had charm as well.
Yeah.
You know, bringing back the kind of the monsters, they may look different, but they've got the heart. I mean, that's where Burton kind of carved out his career with characters like Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
He looks different, but he's a lovable guy.
Yeah, okay. And so it works. It's not too sentimental or sappy.
No, it manages to find that perfect balance which he's been lacking for such a long time. I'm back on the Burton bandwagon. This has kind of reinstilled my faith in him, I think.
It's a joyous place to be. And Vincent Price is still alive? How old's Vincent Price?
I think he's dead. I hope he's not. Or is. Or
and
no.
Martin Landau's still alive?
He is. I actually had that comment when we walked out and we Googled him, and the first thing that came up was the obituary for the day after I Googled him. Apparently there's a website which gives you that fake obituary. And I thought, oh, I've killed him. I've Googled him and I've killed him. But no, he is still alive.
And do you remember how old he is?
He's 84.
Oh, okay.
Now.
So he's not that old. Okay.
No.
Okay. Still got years and years.